It's Wednesday.
Oh, it is. It definitely is Wednesday. Hi, everybody. It's the bonus hour. It's the stream of consciousness. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. We're thrilled that you're listening. But realistically, Wendy, you know, we just had Fritz Kagi on downstairs.
Yes,
we that
did.
Nothing we do during this hour is going to eclipse that. We've gone to the top of the mountain. So, I mean, we'll do this hour, but we're not going to top
Kagi.
You're
just going to sit back and take Kagi. It easy?
We're not going to top Kagi.
I got to do something right now. I got to find the WGN app on my phone and listen to it, because in my left ear, I am hearing an interview with Dane Neal.
Oh, that's interesting.
So,
on your headphones or just in your head?
Here, let's see if you can pick it up.
It sounds far away. Yeah, I can
hear.
I hear Dane Neal,
but it's loud.
It's very
in my ear
far
right
away.
Now. Yeah, I can't.
You can't. Who can just be expected to work under such conditions?
But I want to make sure on the stream people aren't listening to both, because wouldn't that be a hoot and a holler on this post-election day?
It's difficult, but you know, in a weird way, this is a time where there's no such thing as enough information, Wendy. So if people want to listen to two or three or four things at a time, have at it. It's good for everybody. Are you hearing it on your phone too? Just in your headphones. Maybe you're plugged into a different studio. I know he is in another studio here broadcasting a show. There it is. There's us.
To work under such conditions.
But I want to make sure on the stream people aren't listening to both. Okay. Okay.
That was our show from 7 seconds ago. A lot's changed.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll just listen with one headphone.
All right. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine. Isn't that a Jacob Dylan song? I think it is.
All right, it's been solved.
It's fixed.
Thank
All
you,
right.
Brett.
Thanks, everybody, for coming.
Yeah, it was one
through.
Headlight was yeah. the
Oh, was that the yeah. one headlight? Okay. During the crosstalk earlier, I said to Steve Cochran, there's a story out today, a disturbing story about Robin Williams, the late Robin Williams. We didn't have time downstairs. Can we get into this a little
Please,
bit?
Please. All right. Because I didn't hear it.
There had been allegations over the years, a little bit when he was alive, a little bit after, that he was a little randy, Robin Williams.
Was this just going around the stand-up circles, or did other people hear it?
I'm trying to think of the people who I had ever talked to about, and they were predominantly stand-ups. In one or two instances, they were just fans of his who would just say, I heard that sometimes he could be interesting to work with, and then we would kind of dissect that a little bit.
I am so glad you're not a stand-up comic anymore, because it turns out if you're running with that kind of crowd, there's a lot of bad people.
You've met many stand-up comics over the years, and you know just the nature
They're
of the business.
They're a randy bunch.
A lot of them, yeah. A lot of them are a randy bunch. And I worked with a guy once named Randy Bunch, and he was actually very sedate. Wouldn't you think he'd be the worst of them? He was just the opposite.
In Robin Williams, I preferred like Good Will Hunting, and
you like a more serious Robin Williams.
I didn't like his. Of course, you liked Mork because it was he was supposed to be like that,
right?
But then I had enough Mork on Mork and Mindy. And he was Mork like everywhere else.
Yeah,
and it was too all over the place for me.
He was fantastic. In the one you just mentioned, in Good Will Hunting.
So good.
He's fantastic. There's a movie called What Dreams May Come? Is that what it's called? About a guy whose wife dies. It's something Dreams May Come. Awakenings with Robert De Niro.
Oh, he was
where
good.
He's a doctor.
That is such a good movie. I did not see Good Morning Vietnam.
Oh, he's really good in Good Morning Vietnam. But now that one is more the outrageous Robin Williams. But every once in a while, he would come in and play a very subdued version. Like, I always liked him when they didn't make him, you know, just kind of go crazy. There was always a scene or two in the movie. Sometimes the entire movie was him just being very manic.
I'm not a fan of that.
But the more suppressed Robin Williams was your better Robin, I think. Your
Mrs.
better Robin.
Doubtfire, Jumanji.
Yeah.
What, with Dreams something
what,
you're saying?
I think it's called What Dreams May Come.
I keep thinking you're saying Wet Dreams.
No. That
What Dreams May Come, 1998.
What Dreams Might Come. Yeah. Yeah.
Patch
yeah.
Adams.
Not a fan. Not a fan of the Patch Adams.
Dead Poets.
So good. Man.
That is such a good
he
movie.
He is really good in that. What's the one? Is it called 2 Hour Photo or 4 Hour Photo or 6 Hour?
Oh, 1 Hour Photo.
1 Hour Photo.
It?
I saw the extended dance mix. It was 2-hour photo. It's even scarier.
Was Depeche Mode in it?
Yeah, they were in it. And Fritz Kagi was in it. He played the neighbor.
1-hour photo is the movie we talked about after Robin Williams died, and you suggested that I see it.
Yeah.
And so I went home and told Jim, we've got to see 1-hour photo. And Jim's like, we've seen it. I said, no, we have not. I know we haven't. So we found it online, and we watched it, and I was 3/4 of the way through the movie, and that's when I go, you're right, we did see this.
Oh, it took that long?
Which is what your wife does sometimes with movies.
She does it with books.
Oh, really?
She'll read a book, like, and she'll get to 5 pages from the end, and she'll go, I've read this. And I go, wait, you just read 261 pages.
But I had seen 1-hour photo before, and I forgot, but it really was good.
Creepy. Very creepy movie.
He was good in that.
Yep. Robin Williams, Mork and Mindy co-star, Pam Dauber. Do you know who she's married to?
Yes. He was on Hill Street Blues.
Nope.
Oh. Then I don't know.
Mark Harmon.
Yeah. He wasn't on Hill Street Blues?
No. He was not
Mark
on Hill Street.
Mark Harmon.
Mark Harmon.
No. Harmon. I knew that's who she was married
from
to.
From our WGN sports department.
No.
You sure?
Mark Harmon. When I first met Mark Harmon, I thought his name was Mark Harmon. But it isn't. It's Carmen.
I am just now realizing those are two different people. I am shocked.
I thought he was on Hill Street Blues.
No. He was
NCIS.
Yeah, he's on NCIS.
He was on something.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was. But that's who she's married
to.
Yeah, I knew
that.
Mark Harmon.
Who didn't know that?
Robin Williams.
Saint Elsewhere. I got it confused.
Yeah, he was on Saint
Elsewhere.
That's all right.
That's what I meant.
One a cop drama, one a medical drama.
But that's what I meant.
They were on at the same time. Robin Williams, Mork and Mindy co-star Pam Dauber is opening up about her complicated on-set relationship with the late comedian Robin Williams. In a new book about the actor's life titled Robin, the former actress Pam Dauber, 66.
She's writing a book about him? This is her book?
I don't think this is her book. I think what they did is they talked to a bunch of people who he spent time with.
Because if she's writing a book on him, I'm going to write a book about you someday.
Calling it Robin?
Why?
That's ridiculous. It's chosen.
I'm going to call it Fritz Kagi.
Fritz Kagi is a good name for a book. The actress says that Williams was such a nice person who had a gigantic heart.
Oh.
This according to
excerpts. I thought you were going to say something else. Gigantic heart.
Obtained in the Daily Mail. Here's what she says. I really loved Robin, and Robin really loved me. We just clicked, she said, about the upcoming biography. Pam Dauber and Robin Williams, however, Dauber said that she opened up about Williams' alleged sexual behavior on the show.
Towards her?
Yeah, kind of. Which helped skyrocket the actor
to fame.
I had the grossest, this is very telling, I had the grossest things done to me by him, but I never took offense.
Well, then she shouldn't be talking about it now. If she didn't take offense.
Don't you think, being a fan of his, that he was just so caustic that I don't know that I need to speak for him, but I don't think he was trying to be, if he was offensive to any women on the set of Mork and Mindy, I don't think he was I don't think he was doing that intentionally. I just think he was so million miles an hour that some of it was probably offensive to some people and some of it probably wasn't. And he didn't know when to stop or start.
He was just being a goof. And if she said, what did that last sentence, it didn't bother her?
I had the grossest things done to me by him and I never took offense.
Okay. I never took offense, so now she's taking offense?
Well, no, she's not really taking offense. She's just commenting on his behavior. She said that he had flashed her, he had grabbed her on the set.
But she didn't take offense, so why now is it like, oh my God, he did these things?
I think because the culture is such right now. Yeah, everybody's telling their stories, so she's saying her story is that he was doing these things, but she was handling it. She didn't feel
offended.
Well,
she wasn't handling it. He was handling it.
So she wasn't offended by it. It was happening. He was doing things that other guys are getting in trouble for, but maybe their relationship was such that she just accepted it and went, well, that's the way he is. And
then that's the way it should have stayed. I'm mad that all of a sudden now, if it didn't, It's one thing if she's coming forward and she said, you know what, it did offend me and I didn't know what to do.
That would be troublesome.
That would make sense of bringing it forward, but to say something like...
Well, maybe what she's doing is she's providing a contrast to all the other stories, saying in all these other cases, in all these other relationships where guys were doing these things, they didn't have the kind of a kinship that he and I had where I just accepted it. You know, I bet there's a lot of backlash toward her for this. I bet a lot of actresses will come forth going, you never should have put up with that. Don't you think?
Right. And if she's coming for...
She doesn't seem like she's not...
Then why say it,
she's not complaining
or
tattling. I think she's saying it to say that in some of these relationships that others would construe as deviant sexual behavior, she didn't.
Yeah, but it's just opening up a can of worms everyone's going to comment on.
Maybe.
There are a lot of people in radio I could talk about like that. Seriously.
Yeah, I'm positive.
But I just, you know, whatever.
Right.
It happened. I moved on.
She said, she continued by saying...
Phil F. is not one of them.
I'm not one of them.
I might add.
She said, I was flashed, humped, bumped, grabbed... I think he probably did it to a lot of people, but it was so much fun, she says.
Okay, so...
But I...
She's going to get both sides mad at her.
But she's not coming forth to complain. I mean, all she's saying is, our relationship, hers and Robin Williams, was such that he did these things. He wasn't doing it to be malicious. He was just so... You remember him in his glory days where he was just all over the place. So part of that was grabbing, flashing, bumping.
Humping,
jumping. Dauber added, somehow he had that magic. If you put it on paper, you would be appalled. But somehow he had this guileless little thing that he would do and those sparkly eyes. He'd look at you real playful, like a puppy, all of a sudden. And then he'd grab your breasts and then run away. And somehow he could get away with it. It was the 70s, after all. There's going to be some backlash.
Well, I don't like her bringing this up. It's like she's besmirching his name, but not complaining about it. So why bring it up? Do you know what I mean?
Well, because I imagine when they were writing this book, they said, this is an important part. If we're writing a book about Robin Williams and his history... It would be crucial to talk to Pam Dauber because
right.
that was kind of all
right.
So then they probably said, "Hey, there's always been some innuendo that Robin wasn't very well behaved while making the show. What do you think?"
But she could have just said, "Oh, Robin was Robin. He was like a little puppy." But she got into specifics that you know, his kids are going to read this. It's like if you're not complaining about it and you're not saying, you know, he really had a problem, I should have said something about it, then why bring it up? It goes back to when I complain about my omelet and Jimmy Mack says to me, "You don't want her to replace it?" I said, "No, I just wanted to let her know." It's kind of like you're not solving the problem.
I don't think she perceives it as a problem. I think she's saying these things just so that it's on the record, just to not get him in any trouble or not.
But it's going to get him in trouble. People are going to go, "Oh my God, Pam, you should sue his estate. You never should have been treated that way." And she shouldn't have, but it looks like she didn't ever say, "Cut it out."
Right.
I'm just really confused.
But don't you think she would, like,
you're doing it to sell the book.
If this was disturbing her, I think she probably could have said that. And he did seem the type. Now, I never met him, but over the years, I worked with and have met so many people that knew him really well. And the only bad mark I ever get on him ever is that he openly stole material. He just constantly stole. Yeah, just over and over and over again. He was notorious for seeing somebody do something and saying, "Well, now I'll do that."
Did he rework it? Was it an obvious steal?
Not always. Yeah, and I was talking about this with Steve Cochran earlier because, you know, Steve was a former stand-up, and again...
Still does.
Knew a lot. Yeah, he still does. But he used to be... I mean, he was a full-time, like I was, you know? So many times, guys would tell the story about... especially in San Francisco, because Robin, that was his home base, was San Francisco. So the guys that I knew in San Francisco, if you'd ever bring him up, they would just give you a look like, "Oh, here we go." And then the story was always the same, that if they knew he was in the room, they either wouldn't do new material or wouldn't do anything that they were afraid he would steal, because he would show up on a television show a day or two later and do what he just saw on stage. And his excuse was always, I'm thinking so fast, I don't know if I came up with it or if I saw it, I was influenced by something else. But he used to his credit, if a guy came up to him, and I've heard this from so many different guys over the years who could prove it, they'd go, if you called him out on it and go, hey, Robin, the thing you do about the orthodontist, I've been doing, and so he would just sit, he would write you a check for $5,000, he'd hand it to you, and that was it. No questions asked. He did it so many times. Just to say,
that's,
I know,
wild.
I do it. Here's my penance. Here's $5,000.
That show that I love on Showtime, I'm Dying Up Here, which got renewed and it'll be on for a second season. And God, please watch it, because you lived this, not quite in the 70s. This was a little before your time. But they really, there's a scene where they completely all got together and beat the heck out of this guy that stole someone's joke. I mean, that is like the worst. And there are still comics out there that do it.
Wow, there's so many.
But there are?
Yeah.
But why doesn't somebody, why is there, like, you know, how the union has a not safe list, do not act here? Why don't you have, like, a comic thief list?
There were a bunch of clubs. Like, I would see a guy's name on a list. You know, they're bringing this guy in. And I go, are you sure you want to bring that guy in? And they'd say, why? And I go, I've worked with him a couple times, and He borrows material.
And that's like the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
To lose respect. On that I'm Dying Up Here, it's like there was somebody who stole a joke and they all took him outside acting like their friend and beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
It's like you don't do that.
Yeah.
And they all stuck together.
When there was an improv here in the city, Chicago Improv, for a while, great club. It was a really nice club, and it was based on the ones that are in other parts of the country. One night while I was working there, they had the winner of this teenage stand-up contest. He was going to do some time between the opener and me. It was the opener. I was the middle act that week, and then the headliner. So they said, hey, we're going to bring this kid on. We had this contest the last couple months. He's the grand prize winner. He's going to do some time. I go, that's fine. So he goes up, and then his opening joke was something that I did. It was one of my jokes. And then he did some other joke, and then the next two jokes were jokes of mine.
Oh, my God.
And then when it was all said and done, 8 or 9 jokes were ones that I had done before. And I said that there was a door guy there, Nelson. And I go, Nelson, is this just me, or is that guy doing, like, essentially my act? And he goes, no, he is. So then after the show, I came up to him, and he sees me, and he's like, so excited to see me. He goes, you're one of my favorite guys.
Yeah,
you're...
obviously.
I go, I noticed there was some crossover in between what you do and what I do. He goes, I'm really new at this. He goes, I wrote a couple of jokes on my own that don't do real well, but I found that if I do other guys' jokes,
oh,
it gets...
Oh, my God.
And I go, you got to stop doing that. You can't, you won't, you'll hit a dead end, because people won't hire you if you're doing other people's stuff.
He was probably so lucky to have done your jokes and you telling him, because there would have been somebody else who would have beat the crap out
right.
of him.
Right.
Seriously. And you were, of course you were mad, but you were trying to help him.
I was partially flattered, but partially like, so, because I said to him, I go, are you going to try to get work doing other people's stuff? And he goes, I'm still trying to decide that. I go, believe me, it won't end well. I go, it's not, it won't play out well. You can't just steal people's
At least
stuff.
He could have said something like, oh, was that your joke?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard it. I thought I heard it in my own mind.
No.
He just completely admitted.
He was happy. Yeah, he was happy to see me there, seeing him do it.
I steal Judy Pylak's material
all the time. Aren't there only so many jokes?
No. No.
Really, you just keep making them up every day?
There's new stuff happens every day.
Well, that's true, actually. If I listen to you every day, and every day you do say something that
I couldn't
have said, sort of funny.
Could Wendy and I have had an hour on Fritz Kage a month ago? I don't think so. That just happened.
That was a recycled joke throughout the day. We did, and it's not even a joke. It's just a name.
Right.
No, it's a joke. It's in Bill's head. It's a joke.
I love it.
I thought he was very nice.
He
the
was
real
a nice
Fritz
man.
Kage, not the one in Bill's head.
No, the one in my head you don't want to meet. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Then Judy's
we'll
got the news.
We'll take a quick break, and then Judy's got the news.
Hey, you stole that from me. Come on. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Have a good day.
Thank you for calling.
That was so pleasant.
It wasn't really. Have a good day.
It was meant to be really pleasant.
Nice. It didn't sound nice.
Have a great day.
That's better. That's way better.
Oh, sometimes you hear things in your head.
Yeah.
But when they come out, because it just sounded like, have a good day. didn't it?
It was a little dismissive,
really?
But yeah, a little bit.
Because I was trying to be peppy after
No, that's all right. That's right. You mentioned in the news Pflugerville, and that sounds like one of those, like if you're watching a sitcom, they would name a city Pflugerville.
Right. Maybe an animated sitcom.
Right.
Pflugerville.
Or
right.
Next to Petticoat Junction was Hooterville.
Right. Yeah.
You have Pflugerville.
Sounds like a nearby
town. Can you imagine
town.
Hooterville? Living there?
Yeah, I'm going to hashtag me too on that one.
Just the name Hooterville.
Yeah. Although they have Hooters.
Yeah, they do.
And I love their wings, man. I got to tell you, they're really good.
They are good.
Coach
their
Q and I go there.
Is the best.
You and Coach Q have been. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
I have news for pretty much Bill Leff and my husband Jimmy Mack.
Oh, I know this seems like it's specializing, but you've got my attention.
Well, I'm sure other people will be into this as well. All the Toys R Us's are closing.
I know this,
and it's weird because I know that you and Jimmy Mack really. This is a moment from your childhood
one
that
of the
makes
saddest,
it, yes.
Really, like of all the businesses that could close, and I get like this every time a bookstore chain goes down, I feel really like, what am I going to do without that bookstore chain?
Did you shop there, though, at Toys R Us?
Well, he collects toys. Now, think about that.
Oh, you didn't do I know, but the reason why it's closing, because everyone shops online.
No, they said that's not exactly what had happened. But I do know that, like, I don't know if your girls have fond memories of Toys R Us, because my boys are sad about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not so much, because I was always irritated going there buying Christmas presents at the last minute.
Oh.
But now my sister is someone else who doesn't have a lot of toys, but she did a lot of those Secret Santas every year. So she liked to go there and talk to the people who work there and say, okay, what's the big hot toy for an 8-year-old?
See, if you didn't have kids and you shopped there, I think it'd be so fun.
Yeah.
But you're like you.
The pressure
was
on.
Oh, we would take.
It got annoying for us.
Yeah. It really.
Because
who had to go to Toys R Us was a big deal.
Not a good deal.
Yep. Screamed and then I had to
really?
Go.
Really?
Hated around Christmas
because it's crazy town. Then
it's horrible.
See, now,
they never have what your kids want. And oh my gosh,
I would go extra times at Christmas because they were getting so many shipments in to keep up with supply and demand that it was a constant barrage of new product out on the shelf. So there were Christmases where I went like every other day or every third day just to see what new stuff was coming in.
You should have hired yourself out to young moms who didn't want to deal with the pressure.
Oh, that's a good idea, and picked up what they needed.
Like, I'll give you $50. Here's my list. Don't come home without it.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Oh, yeah.
I liked it.
I would have loved it.
Yeah.
Well, in Illinois, 31 remaining locations are all shutting down. And Jim collects just Star Wars action figures. Bill goes the whole toy action figure
Anything
route.
Anything that interests me, go for it. Yeah.
Jim is just strictly Star Wars.
Yeah.
So I said, have you gone to Toys R Us yet? Because they're going to have, you know, they're going to liquidate everything. And he told me that he thought it was starting Thursday, but liquidation sales are already underway.
Oh, they are.
So I just wanted to tell you on your way home.
I might have to stop on my way home. Do they say what the savings is?
See, usually they start at 20%.
And then as time goes on, they jump it up a little bit.
They don't have that much left, but...
The 31 Illinois locations include 11 Toys R Us stores, 5 are Babies R Us, 13 are side-by-side stores, and 2 are express locations. The closing also affect the Joliet Distribution Center. Nationwide, the closings will impact 33,000 jobs.
That's a lot.
That's the sad part.
That
awful. Is.
Yeah.
And what the company called an orderly wind down. The news that all locations were shutting down comes more than a month after the late January announcement that 7 Illinois stores would close.
Including the 2 closest to me, but now it's arbitrary because they're all going down. But when that list came out, I went, those are the 2 I go to most often.
Here's what you should know about the liquidation sale. Can I return something I recently purchased?
No.
Who'd even ask that question?
That's easy. No.
Items bought at a store before its liquidation sale begins may be returned to any open store.
No. Interesting.
Once a store has a liquidation sale, returns will not be accepted. What about my gift cards? Here's what I'll tell you. Use them now.
Quickly.
Yeah, right?
Endless earnings.
They probably won't be good.
Until Wednesday, today.
Today's the last day on gift
cards? Endless earnings will be honored until Wednesday. Gift cards are redeemable through April 12th. Merchandise credits will also be honored.
Oh.
But get there like today.
Yeah.
What will happen to my Babies R Us gift registry? These are questions that are really silly because the stores are closing. What are they supposed to do?
Well, but...
But then people could be out potentially a lot of money.
Maybe people have bought stuff and now they haven't had the baby yet.
What
are they going to do if they have to return it?
Do you remember Walden Books?
Yeah.
All right. I had so much credit at Walden Books because over the years, like, people would give me books that I either already had or weren't interested in, so I'd return them and get a gift card, or sometimes they'd just give me gift cards. And then Walden Books kind of went under overnight.
Quick. Yeah.
And I was out a couple hundred bucks in gift cards from them.
So those are good questions.
All right. But yes, the registry loyalty programs, including the Babies R Us registry in the U.S., will continue as normal in their current forms, according to the company. But, I mean, if they're closing, once the store closed, they're not going to be available online.
Wouldn't you think it's possible they would do a thing, like, if they had so much inventory that isn't sold off in the amount of time that they need to sell it off, maybe they'll keep it warehoused for a while and you could buy it online. Maybe their online presence will exist for an extra few months.
Oh, that's a good point.
Or maybe it'll just all go to Goodwill.
All my stuff I bought for the kids was at Babies R Us, because it was like, you know, the first baby you have, this is all so darned exciting.
Sure.
You need the best tricycle and the best high chair.
Yeah.
The pack and play.
And then with Dylan, you just made stuff.
Yeah.
Here, I made you a bike.
I just put him in a clothes basket most of the time. He was smaller than Michael. What about price matching? Toys R Us price match promise is not available at closing stores. It's probably going to be better at Toys R Us anyway.
Yeah.
You'd
think.
All the Illinois stores. But it doesn't say the amount, because I know that's the question you had for me, Bill. It doesn't say how much percentage will be offered.
I had heard somewhere that they were shooting to get to 70%, but like you said, Judy, I don't think that's right away.
Yeah.
It's probably a 10 or 15% initially, and then
depends
it
how quickly they have to get out of there, though.
Well, maybe
this really did happen.
Yeah,
very quickly,
very fast.
But I mean, they're going to want to make the most money,
right?
Of course,
right.
Well, anyone.
This is sad for me.
It's sad overall.
I've been in them 500 times, you know. All over the place. Sometimes, like, if we'd go on a vacation somewhere, they would have inventory at Toys R Us, like in Florida or in Maine or something. Like, stuff that sold out here years ago, they would have, you know, there'd be some sale aisle in the back of the store. And I'm like, they still have these? You know, there'd be some toy. They still sell these? They haven't sold these by us for 5 years.
I just never pegged you to go to Toys R Us. I thought you were more the, you know...
He does all.
Independent toy store that might...
I do those, too.
And eBay.
But you know what was cool? Like, because I was in some of the stores so often, they got to know me. So every once in a while, like, they would have a display of something. Like, one time there was this line of Spider-Man figures, and the display was this great cartoon city that they had up. And I said to one of the guys, are you going to just get rid of this? And he goes, yeah, we got to send it back to the company. I go, is there any way I could have it or something? And he goes, come on in a few weeks, because we're supposed to send it in. And he gave it to me.
Oh, my gosh.
That happened
awesome.
A couple of times.
I have, you know, it's weird. The collector gene goes through families. Was your father or grandfather or mother a collector?
A little. My parents collected Jim Beam liquor bottles, like decorative decanter bottles. They had a bunch of those.
Yeah, everyone collected those. All of our parents.
Mine did. My mom did not.
But it's ironic because they didn't. Neither of my parents drank at all, but they loved the Jim Beam because they would do all these different series of bottles.
So that's
a little bit.
That kind of started, and is that when you had your soda can collection?
Yeah, that was kind of at the same time. Yeah.
So that kind of started.
Yeah, I guess so.
Jim's dad collected just White Sox memorabilia and just a bunch of baseball cards and things. And his basement's filled with a lot of sporting things. So Jim started collecting. And I have said this before, when Jim met Bill at a Christmas party Bill hosted and saw his toy rooms, the next day he went to his mom's house and said, where are all my action figures? And they were in the crawl space untouched. Thank God she never sold them. And he brought them home, and so began the Star Wars room because of this guy.
Oh,
how about that,
nice.
Jude? I can still remember when I was really, really little, so I would have been either 3 or 4, in jewel stores, they gave out, you remember the company Mark's Toys,
yes.
M-A-R-X? All right. So they made little miniature versions, 2 or 3 inch versions, I guess, of the presidents of the United States. But depending on which Jewel you were at, they didn't have all of them. Like, you'd go into a Jewel and they'd only have three or four or five or six. So we would go from, you know, Jewel store to try to get the whole complete set, you know? And I remember, like, the thrill of the hunt, even though I was only 3 or 4 years old, it was so cool to go into a store.
That's more exciting than the completed thing,
in a way, it is. It is. And then there was also a company called Gilbert, and they made James Bond figures that were a little bit bigger than that. But we would also do that. Like, if we were out shopping somewhere, we'd look in a store to try. There were 10 of them, and it was really hard to get all 10. But it was always exciting to go, they've got Goldfinger. This is so cool. You know, it was really like your heart would be faster.
The quest.
When
that's what we always called it. It was like,
well, that's why I would be the goodbye girl. It's all about the hunt.
It is a lot of times.
It is.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. When someone's like, oh, I love your dress, I can't wait to tell them how much I paid.
I know
that
ridiculous, is fun.
You know, it's all about that.
Yeah.
But now, Michael collects guitars, but I heard a lot of guitar players do that, and pedals for the guitars.
Mm-hmm.
But Dylan is really, he collects many different things. He's like a game freak, so all Nintendo. He wants all game systems displayed, and he has gone at I can't think of the name of this game store. GameStop. Yes, thank you. You have
those
kids.
Are, yeah, oh, absolutely.
But there was there are displays there that Dylan has gotten to know them, and it's like, is there any way? And they're like, yeah, come back in 2 weeks. So they do get to know their customers.
They're always supposed
cool to
send to
have
those back.
That display, though. I'm
yeah,
ask
it is.
For one next time.
They're not supposed to do. They're supposed to send them back to the company, you know. But
I think some of those guys take it home for their apartment.
Well, I see stuff on eBay like. There was this giant Darth Vader Lego that was about maybe 2 feet tall. It's gigantic. It's like the little miniature one, but they've blown it up. And that was in Toys R Us stores and Target stores. And I tried so hard to get them, and then I'd find them on eBay, and they were $400 and $500. And I know that's not what it costs to make one of those.
Don't tell Jim.
He'll need one of those. All right, it's our secret. I won't say anything.
Bill always does that. He shows me these things like, hey, has Jimmy seen this? And it's like, why are you? I'm not even telling him.
I'm facilitating
him. You have to be the wall between those two.
Yeah.
I collect shoes. That's what I collect.
I collect old things, but I don't know that I'm a collector. I don't have a lot of one thing. I just like, I like antique-y things.
Right.
But more kitschy.
I have old-time radios. I have about
I have a lot of radios
12
too.
Or 14.
Oh, you have a lot. Yeah, I've
radios.
I've got a stand-up, beautiful console.
Do
Philco.
Too.
But isn't it weird how some people, you'll either have that gene or you won't. Like, Terry's not, she doesn't collect anything. Neither of my daughters really collect anything.
That's weird, though, because honestly, my kids collect stuff. It's totally Jim's fault.
Yeah.
And I will say this, when Bill created the monster of the Star Wars room.
The Rancor monster of the Star Wars room?
Yes. And Jim has, there's a closet in the Star Wars room with shelves, and it's like you look in the Star Wars room and it's the best room of the house. It's the turret in our house. The best bedroom is the Star Wars room, and it's a lot of stuff, but then the piece de resistance is when he opens the closet doors, because all the shelves are filled with action figures and they're set up depicting various scenes.
Mm-hmm.
That is hilarious.
It is, and it's like, I laugh at him, but then I'm proud of that room. And when the kids were little, Jim would give them an action figure to play with, and I swear to God, he would not give them a new one until he brought those back. It was like a library. You had to bring this figure back.
Is there like a turnstile to get in?
No, but they,
because that would be really cool. You might want to consider one of those next.
Our kids don't listen to anything, and to this day, and all back then, they always abided by the Star Wars room rules.
Okay, well, that's, I think, heartening that they were allowed to play, which means they're not in boxes just sitting there with, is that how yours are, Bill?
No, mine are in
yours.
Like glass cases.
Yeah, glass cases.
They're all
so,
displayed.
I mean, do you play with them?
I don't play with them. I mean,
Jim still does.
I don't.
What does he set them up on the basement floor and have wars and stuff?
No, but they're.
Well, how does he play with them?
Well, he looks at them and dusts them, and
I don't know that.
He's caretaking.
He doesn't lay. I wish, you know, you'd see these pictures of
the
kids
sounds.
Laying on their side. You know,
right.
Boom.
Yep.
Yeah.
And making
one time, my
voices.
Son made a movie with all of his Lego figures. He liked it, a stop action movie.
Oh, that's
all
cool.
All summer.
That's very
cool. But, you know, that's what I mean. Play setting them up. I would come down to the basement every few weeks and just shake my head and cry a little bit and then go back up.
Well, the cutest thing is Michael is now 18 years old, but when he was first learning to walk and talk, I'd say about 2 or 3, we have an old Victorian house, and he would get scared going into the old part of it in the front. So he would yell to make sure, like, Mom, Dad, what, Michael? Oh, I'll be right back. He just wanted to hear our voice.
Yes.
And that's when it started where Michael would go, Dad? Yeah. What's your favorite Star Wars action figure today? And Jim every day would make up a different thing. And to this day, I mean, he's 18 years old, and there's maybe a handful of days he didn't ask Jim every day. And if he's out of town, he texts him, Dad, what's your favorite Star Wars character today? So that is like a sweet little thing that they have together.
That is.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan felt left out, so he asks Jim what his favorite superhero is today, because Dylan likes all the Marvel stuff.
A lot of pressure on Jimmy.
Yeah. A lot of pressure. Well, they know not to ask me because I thought, shut up, I don't have time.
He's probably got 1,000 in his head, so, right?
But I thought that was just super cute. If Michael ever moves away, I think he'll text him and say,
every night.
Yeah.
Got to call my dad. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Judy, thanks for hanging out.
Absolutely.
We'll find out what's on Sports Central.
Fritz Kagi is.
Are they having Fritz Kagi on? Lucky. All right, it's Bill and Money WGN.
Why don't you just have the Kagi corner?
The Kagi corner.
I like it.